Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. So we've come to the Sammasati fold of the Eightfold Path. So it's right mindfulness, or right awareness, or perfect awareness, or attuned awareness. And the whole of the Satipatthana Sutta fits in here. So it's just a little word, like two little words, Sammasati, but it kind of brings in the whole of the four establishments of mindfulness, or the four foundations of mindfulness. So it's kind of it opens up into a huge practice and a huge topic in a way. But I'm not going to speak very hugely long tonight because I'm tired after a late night, or rather early morning, and I expect you all are too. So sati, or awareness, is it's a crucial factor in this path of awakening. And often we hear about samadhi, and there's a interest in samadhi, and samadhi is, you know, also really, it's very good. We'll be speaking about the last fold in the path is samadhi, and samadhi is kind of a little bit more, you know, it's more attractive. It's got a nice feeling, and it feels like you're really kind of getting somewhere when you've got samadhi. Whereas sati is just this. It's just being present with this. And this isn't always that exciting. And sometimes it's downright awful. And yet sati is the quality that we bring to this experience that's going on right now, whether that's the body, the feeling tones, the mind state, or the contents or objects of mind. And it's easy to forget about sati and get involved in the objects, you know. So that maybe there's a painful feeling and the mind's just kind of locked onto that painful feeling and struggling with it and trying to find a way of getting rid of it so we can get a decent meditation going. And yet, to bring sati to that painful feeling is, it brings us back onto the path. And sati generally comes along with a friend or two. So in the Eightfold Path, it's got seven good friends there. And so sati on its own is simply awareness, but awareness, just awareness, isn't really enough. There needs to also be some, there can be wisdom, satipanya. Awareness that is also aware of the arising and passing away of things. And there's also sati sampajanya. Awareness that has a sort of clear discernment as to what to do with what's going on. So, at any moment, I think it was Ute Janir who said, at every moment we are cultivating the mind in some way. So there is no time, there is no moment, conscious moment, where we're not cultivating the mind. But what are we cultivating in the mind? So sati is really important for keeping things on track if we want to walk this path of awakening. And basically, you know, when there's sati, there, you know, it is in itself a wholesome state. So if we bring, well, samasati is. So if we bring sati or awareness to a feeling tone, immediately, regardless of whether it's a pleasant feeling tone or a painful feeling tone or a neutral feeling tone, immediately there is an alignment with the path. And there is clear seeing, clear knowing. And then we might find, you know, that maybe there's a pleasant feeling, and then there's like, that's nice, I want more of that. So if we notice that, it's like feeling tone has a kind of a push to it. There's a sort of a push or sometimes a pull, that if we don't have sati, strong, clear sati, then we don't notice it, and then we're just pushed around or pulled along with the pleasant or the painful feelings that arise. And they can be bodily feeling, or they can be mental. So, you know, so in the bodily would be sukha for pleasant and dukkha for unpleasant, and nidukkha, nisukha for neither pleasant nor unpleasant, the neutral. And for the mind, there's dhammanasa, which is it's like the painful mental feeling or difficult mental feeling, and somanasa, the pleasant mental feeling. So when there's sati, we're not just pushed around by those pleasant, painful, and neutral experiences, but we have some sati sampajanya. When we have mindfulness and clear comprehension, then there's some recognition of what's going on and a choice in what we do with it. And when there's no sati, then we're lost in the, we're kind of pushed around by the moods and the feelings and the wants and the not and the don't wants that arise. So it's said that, you know, when there's no sati, inevitably there will be greed or hatred or aversion. Let's say hatred is a bit strong. There will be greed or aversion or delusion present. So sati is a very, very important aspect of the path. And then the good news is that, you know, if there's greed, hatred or delusion or any combination of those three present, and you know, and a few people here have said, oh gosh, you know, I spent this much time just sitting in meditation, totally lost and totally caught up in this, that and the other, and then I finally saw what I was doing. And so the moment that happens, that we see, oh my goodness, I've been completely lost in a delightful fantasy, or in thoughts of ill will, or, you know, whatever it was, or hating the feeling in my painful hip, or whatever it is. And then the moment that we notice that, often what we do is we notice it and then we kind of chastise ourselves for having been doing that for so long, when we should have been mindful. So really what we need to do is celebrate, because the mindfulness, the sati, the awareness has cut it. It's not that it necessarily goes away, the feeling doesn't go away, but it's cut the lostness into that feeling or that experience, and suddenly we're aware, there's awareness. So that's a moment to celebrate. It's not a moment to then immediately chastise oneself for not having had that sooner. So any moment of mindfulness is something to rejoice in. And you know, when there's strong, when mindfulness is strong, it's not too concerned about what it's mindful of, just as a mirror isn't concerned about what it's reflecting. It's just doing its job of reflecting, and sati has that quality too. And when the sati is weak, then, you know, maybe we bring sati or awareness to something that's difficult, and then it all sort of gets a bit entangled, and we get lost in the difficult thing, and then we sort of maybe mistake the sati for, you know, we sort of get it mixed up, and we think, oh no, I don't want to bring awareness to that thing because it's really painful, and so I don't want to go there. But when the sati is strong, it's not a problem. We can take it. We can bring it to anything. Doesn't matter how scary, how awkward, how embarrassing, how painful, how delightful. Well, delightful can be a little bit more challenging, actually. It is. It's got to be a bit more strong than delightful. We can know what's going on, and then with the clear comprehension, sampajanya, then we know what to do with that. So sometimes we need to just turn our awareness to something else, or we need to broaden our awareness or focus in. So the sampajanya is like a wisdom aspect or a discernment aspect that knows what to do with what the sati finds. And when we first start to, like before we start to meditate, for most people there's just this kind of enmeshedness of our experience and a sense of self, everything's just all kind of one thing, and there's rarely a sense of being able to be aware of what's going on with some equanimity. We're just kind of in it. And then when we start to meditate, we get to see that, and sometimes it's a little bit shocking. and then we can develop this practice that's known as the watcher or the knower, where there's a bit of a sort of a stepping back from our experience, so that we can see it more clearly. So we're no longer enmeshed in it, but we're leaning back a bit, and we're looking at it from a little bit of a distance. Not too much of a distance, otherwise we're totally dissociating, but a little bit of a distance. And that gives us the chance to know these states, you know, painful, pleasant, neutral states, which are generally much more complex than that. You know, there's all kinds of more complex kind of feelings and moods and so on going on. But that distance gives us a chance to get to know what's going on, and then get to know how it works and what it feels like. So I remember on a walking meditation path once, getting really intimately to know anger. Really getting to know what it feels like, where it is, how it moves in the body, even kind of what colour it is. For me, it's like, okay, it's got colour, it's got different ways it moves, and where it is in the body, and being able to move away from the storyline, the narrative, very important. Leave the narrative. The narrative is not going to help. But to come into, to bring awareness to the actual direct experience. And then the sampajanya or the clear comprehension knew to just stay with that, just stay with that, get to know it, get familiar with it, and so that it no longer has mastery over me. And then the satipanya, the awareness with wisdom is that which recognizes, oh, there it is, you know, it's arising, it's really, really strong, it's powerful, and it's got all this energy, and then it changes. Not just that it goes away, but it's changing all the time. It's constantly changing. And then at some point, after walking up and down for quite a while, it finally subsided, and it's like, ah. Oh. Nice. And then there can be awareness of the absence of anger. Like, oh, that's nice. And then, and that's nice for a while, and then that gets to be nothing in particular. You know, and then that gets, it's kind of harder to stay with because it's not exciting. But the sati does really need to be brought to everything. Everything, yeah, we experience. And so, and the beauty of this practice is that we can practice it while we're in formal meditation, and we can practice it pretty much whatever we're doing. So, and the encouragement is to keep as much as possible a continuity of awareness practice. I think one of the biggest challenges to that is the phone. Because it's so, you can just absorb into your phone and lose yourself. So it's very difficult to maintain sati awareness, and or the laptop, you know. It's difficult to maintain, it's not impossible, it totally can be done, but it's difficult to maintain sati, and there can be these kind of, you know, you can be practicing awareness and then you just like, I haven't got a phone, but you can just like put your phone on and start something, and then you find yourself like an hour and a half, 2 hours later, wondering what happened. So that's another moment to be like, oh good, I'm back, you know, okay, let's turn it off. So, big challenge of our time. So as we cultivate sati, we shift from being from the moods and the feelings and the perception of the mind and body being having mastery over our life to the awareness being a means to kind of take the reins, as though you're like driving a chariot or something. It's like you take the reins with sati. And Ajahn Chah gives this lovely image of, you know, as he's saying, it's as if you're in a room or in a kuti, like a one-room dwelling, and there's only one seat in the room. And if you're sitting on that seat, then you know all these. So it's like there's a room with two doors, and then there's all of these characters start coming in. You know, the seductive ones and the rough ones and the nagging ones and the, you know, all of the different ones, all those different voices that we have in our heads can start coming in the door. And if you're sitting on that seat, there's only one seat. If you're sitting on it, then they might come for a while and they might, you know, they might try their various means on you. But after a while they get bored and they go away because there's nowhere to sit down. They don't have a place. But if you're not sitting in that seat, if there isn't sati, then they're going to sit down. They're going to take over. And then you're like, ah, help, help. So I love that image because it's like, okay, it's really important just keeping that seat. And then you just endure them. You know, you just wait. You wait them out. Sooner or later they're going to get bored because you're not playing the game and they're going to move on. So it's kind of like that. And sometimes that can be going on in our practice and we think, oh my goodness, my practice is a total disaster. And because we're seeing all of those characters and we think that that's, you know, who and what we are. But if we're sitting in that seat of sati, they're just characters passing through, you know. And the more we stay centered in that seat, the less interested they are in coming around. It's not so much fun anymore. So gradually, we reclaim this life as our means to awaken, you know, this precious human birth. we gradually reclaim it with sati. And also, lovely that at any moment, we can bring that in as soon as we remember, and then we can look at, so where was I? What was going on there? Where was the mind? Was I just lost in? It might be a strong narrative of self, or it might be some sweet fantasy of some lovely something else that's better than this, or it might be the inner critic that's just nagging away, judging away, always telling you all the things that are wrong. It can be any of those things, and many other things, jealousy and fear. There's so many things, but we look at so what is it? Where have we been pulled away? What have we been pulled away into? And so that's just the clear comprehension again, the sampajanya, that looks and knows and is interested in the context. And so then we see, which of the hindrances was that? Was it doubt? Was it ill will? Was it sensual desire? Etc. And then once we know, so even knowing the hindrances, being present with the hindrances, is we are on track. It is there in the four foundations of mindfulness, or the four establishments of awareness, it's a different way of saying it. The fourth foundation points to having awareness of, or awareness when the hindrances are present. So the awareness, awareness of the hindrances is already on the path. But then we don't have to just stay with them. It's good to work on transforming them, or bringing a more wholesome quality to mind. And sati is also the first of the seven awakening factors. This actually comes up all over the place in many lists, but that's a really, really important one. So as soon as there's sati, you're taking the first step on the path to awakening. You're back on track. And then if there's a sense of interest and inquiry into what's going on, then you've taken a second step. And if you stay with it, if you put the energy in to stay with it, so you're not just curious then on to the next thing, then you've taken the third step, virya. So this is very, very simple. So, so simple. It's just those three qualities of sati, dhammavicaya, and virya. So awareness, inquiry or investigation, and energy bring us back onto the path. We're right on the path there. And then as we stay with it, other qualities start to arise. So sati is easily overlooked as not being so kind of we kind of know it's important, but it's not exciting, it's not wow, it's very simple. It's so simple that we sort of overlook it. And yet it is this really, really important quality that is needed for awakening. And it's not just for awakening in the future, but for awakening right now in the present. It awakens us to the present. And awakening with a big A is only ever going to happen in the present. It's not going to happen any other time. So it's very, very important. And I also like to reflect on how it belongs, how the sammasati belongs in that in the Eightfold Path. So when we look at the four foundations of mindfulness, or the four establishments of awareness, those awareness of body, feeling tone, mind states, and mind objects, it can be just kind of it can be a little bit just like too dry, and so you know, those first two factors of the Eightfold Path, the wisdom factors of right understanding and right intention or right thought, are very important. So right understanding is understanding that, you know, everything's in a state of flux, it's all changing. So we bring that quality to, you know, there's awareness, and there's also noticing the changing nature of things, which is also panya, actually, satipanya. And right thought, or right intention, renunciation, compassion, kindness. So we're bringing those qualities along with the sati. The sati is within the context of right thought, if it's part of the Eightfold Path. So it's not just cold, but it's like there's the warmth of metta, or the gentleness of compassion, or the equanimity of renunciation. So that supports those two, I mean all of the factors, but particularly very much those two factors of the path support the deepening and strengthening of sati in our practice. When there's really strong awareness, when awareness is really strong, there's not really much room for the story of self. Sort of, because sati is always just immediate, it's very present and immediate, and the story of self just needs a bit of time, you know. So it can bring some sweet relief from the old stories, you know, the narratives. It's just like this right now. So we can just do it now. What's it like? We turn our awareness back to this experience. What's it like to just be with this body, just like this? It may not be the way we would like it to be. You know, we may wish it was different, it wasn't aging like it is, or it isn't as heavy as it is, or it doesn't have that ache. Or it may be that we think, yeah, I've got a really good one for a while. So sati is just knowing. So if that's part of the story, then you know that too. It's like, oh yeah, that's that delusion part. And then you just come back to, what is it like? What is it like right now to be here with this body? And then when we do that, we might notice layers of judgment, layers of shoulds and shouldn'ts, or shame, or pride that is connected with this body. So those are overlays, and then we can notice that, and then just like, what is it like just to be with the, what is it like to just contemplate that this body is made up of flesh and bones and skin and teeth and hair, you know, what is it like to contemplate that? And that it, that as we say in our mealtime reflection sometimes, that it comes from the earth and it returns to the earth. It's true. So what is it like to contemplate the body in that way? And then there's for me, there's like a calming. There's just like a... Because it's just part of nature that's doing what nature does. I couldn't, you know, this me, Anandabodhi, couldn't direct what's going on here. I don't even know most of what's going on in here, let alone being able to sort of direct it. So it's not like this is me and mine. It's nature. It's amazingly brilliant nature doing what nature does. And so when we reflect on the body in that way, there's like a, there can be like a calming. And you know, likewise with any of those four establishments of mindfulness, of awareness, there's, you know, when we're aware of the feeling tone just as it is, without the add-ons. So, you know, we become aware of pleasant feeling and then we want more, usually. And then we become aware of painful feeling, or painful feeling grabs us and we want to get rid of it somehow, as soon as possible. And then for a long time we just don't become aware of the neutral feeling. We don't notice it because it's not interesting enough. So the Buddha speaks about the underlying tendencies, and so the underlying tendency, what's kind of hidden underneath pleasant feeling tone, is greed, the greed for more and more and more and more. And what's hidden beneath the feeling tone, the painful feeling tone, is aversion. Get rid of it as soon as possible. I don't like it. And what's hidden beneath the neutral feeling is ignorance, because we ignore it. So when there's sati, when it's clear, strong sati, we see those tendencies. We see those underlying tendencies that are hidden there. And then we've got some choice. We don't have to just follow them. And speaking a few days ago about the samsara, you know, that endless cycle of going towards what's pleasant and moving away from what's unpleasant. You know, it just goes on and on. It's known as the endless round of rebirths. It just goes on and on and on. Because having a sensitive body, that it is impossible to have a sensitive body and only experience pleasure. Not possible. Completely impossible. And so, you know, in the experience of the body is going to have pleasant experiences, it's going to have painful experiences, it's going to have neutral experiences. Right now, I could find all three of those easily here. You know, pretty much any given moment. Maybe occasionally there might be times when there's no painful feeling, you know, or no dukkha present, you know, sometimes. But that will only be for a little while, and then it, you know, comes back. So, because all three are always here, or never far away, if we're looking for the pleasant and trying to get away from the unpleasant, it's going to be endless. It's going to be endless. So the teaching is inviting us to turn back and look at all of it, to know all of it, and to develop the strength that can be with the inevitable painful feelings that arise, and can be with the pleasant feelings that arise, and just experience them as pleasant, and that's enough, and watch them arise and gratify us for a few moments, and then change, and then end, and then there's that nothing in particular, or maybe even a bit of dukkha afterwards. To know all of that, to know the whole cycle, and if we can follow things through in that way, not just get the hit, you know, but follow things through in that way, all the way through. It's a deep incentive to let go of that constant grasping and pushing away. And, you know, when we stop grasping and pushing away, then we're here, then there's just this. Then there's just present moment abiding. And there's the relief from the wanting and not wanting. And there's the brightness that is not that is different, you know, that is not found in the neutral or the dull. I don't say that neutral is dull, but it's that we don't. There's a brightness, so of mind, of awareness, and that brightness isn't too worried about what it's experiencing. It's just interested. So sati, our very, very precious, this very precious quality that is so easily overlooked. Yeah. And it's like one can spend years just caught up in things, caught up in life, caught up in the story, caught up in plans and projects and future and past. And then a moment of mindfulness. It's like being in a dark room for a long time, then lighting a candle. Suddenly, all of that darkness is gone. So sati is like that. It's beautiful. It just brings light to what is. And then what we see might not be what we want to see. So we can work on that. So, okay. So I'd like to end with a poem from Manny's book. So this is the poem of Samma. So there are two Sammas, and this is the second one, so this is another Samma. Samma Bhikkhuni. After 25 years in Nepal, I'd experienced almost everything except peace. When I was young, my mother told me I would find true happiness only in marriage. Remembering her words all those years later, something in me began to tremble. I gave myself to the trembling, and it showed me all the pain this little heart had ever known, and how countless lives of searching had brought me at last to the present moment, which I happily married. Can you imagine? We've been living together ever since without a single argument. So, for tonight.